I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is children's music star Billy Jonas. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish Mevinah in Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our new Shinshinim, Chen Dinachi, and Tamir Shakuri, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. After the conclusion of Yom Kippur, the Great Day of Atonement last night, a final Gemara Chatiba Tova, may you and your family be sealed in the Book of Life for a good year in 5778. And in the relentless cycle of Jewish fall festivals, this coming week we begin the fall harvest holiday of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles or Booths. Actually, this morning it's a little complicated how we are to greet one another in Jewish tradition. Yesterday, of course, was Yom Kippur, holiest day of the year, the fast day on which we neither ate nor drank for 24 hours plus. On Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, we greet each other with the phrase, Gemar Chatima Tova, may you be sealed in the Book of Life. So it's okay to still say that today, although technically speaking, it all ended last night with the conclusion of Ne'ilah, the locking of the gates of repentance at the end of the Day of Atonement and the final Tkiya Gedolah, the great shofar call. So I started today by saying Gemar Chatima Tova, and, you know, that wasn't wrong. But it's also still very early in the Jewish New Year. This is just the 11th day of that year, so it's also fine to say L'Shana Tova, a good new year. However, the most appropriate greeting this morning comes because the longest Jewish holiday of all, and one of the most pleasurable, begins this coming Wednesday night. It's the 8-day-long combination festival of Sukkot, Shmini Atzeret, and Simchat Torah, which continues from Wednesday night all the way to the following Thursday night, and if you're Orthodox or conservative, all the way until a week from Friday night, and then you start Shabbat. The correct greeting on Sukkot is Chag Sameach, a happy holiday, since this is supposed to be the happiest time of the year, called in Hebrew Zman Simchatenu, the season of our joy. And so, Chag Sameach. But we're not done yet. Because in addition to Chag Sameach, you can also say, in a kind of more educated, fancier greeting, Moadim L'Simcha, which means may you have holidays of joy. And then the person you greet is supposed to knowingly reply, Chagim Uzmanim L'Sason, which means may you have holidays and times of celebration. We can try that today. Are you ready? I'll say Moadim L'Simcha, and you say back, Chagim Uzmanim L'Sason. Okay, here we go. Moadim L'Simcha. Not really sure that works on radio. Perhaps we should just keep it simpler. How about we go with the Yiddish phrase, Gud Yontif? Actually, that one's not quite usable until the holiday begins, or at the earliest, the day before the holiday, like Wednesday during the day before sundown. That means we probably should just stick to Chag Sameach, which for some unknown sociological reason, it's okay to say a few days early, and it's good to work on your ch sound too. Well, one last add on how we greet one another in this holiday season. Way back in 1991, when I lived in Israel, I set up a program in Jerusalem for rabbinic, cantorial, and education students to go to an immigrant absorption center and play with the kids and teach Hebrew to the adults and the kids. My own Hebrew name is Simcha, which means joy or celebration, as in Moadim L'Simcha. And you are therefore supposed to reply, Chagim Uzmanim L'Sason, right? One day at the absorption center during Sukkot, back in 1991, I was playing soccer with a few kids, and afterwards they introduced me to their families. One of the kids' very nice older brothers and I had a great chat in Hebrew. At the end of it, I stuck out my hand and said, Korim Li Simcha, which means, my name is Simcha. To which he answered, Sason. I thought he was completing a version of the Sukkot greeting, so I said, Chag Sameach, Happy Holiday. And then he said, no, his name was Sasson. There we were, Simcha v'Sasson. Between us, named for joy and celebration, and we met on Sukkot, this festival of joys, Zman Simchatenu. Good timing, no? All of which is a long prelude to telling you that Sukkot, the festival of booths or tabernacles that starts this week, is one of my favorite holidays. Although it occurs too soon after the end of the High Holy Days, just 4 days after Yom Kippur is the beginning of Sukkot, it's filled with lovely rituals and experiences that make it a truly pleasurable holiday. The Fall Harvest Festival for our people, it combines elements of agriculture, construction, al fresco dining, guests, parties, and Thanksgiving into a truly delightful mix. No wonder it's Zman Simchatenu. Traditionally on Sukkot, we invite guests to join us in our sukkah, the temporary booth we build just for a week of this festival. Family, friends, new arrivals in town, visitors, everybody is supposed to have a place to go for Sukkot, for sukkahs. But in addition, we also symbolically welcome our patriarchs and matriarchs as guests into our sukkah. First Abraham and Sarah, then Isaac and Rebekah, then Jacob, Leah and Rachel, then Joseph, Moses, Aaron, King David, all come into our humble huts, symbolically, to celebrate the fall harvest and thank God in style. They're called Ushpizin, special guests. Look, the essence of Sukkot is to offer gratitude to God. And to play us in this morning, here's a composition and rendition of Psalm 150, giving praise to God, from our guest this morning, Billy Jonas. It's Kol HaNeshama.
Praise. Praise.
Yeah.
Praise.
Praise in the temple.
Praise. Yeah.
Praise in the street.
Praise.
Praise God in the eyes of every face you meet.
Praise.
Praise for your partner.
Praise. Yeah.
Praise for your foe.
Praise.
Praise for everyone and
praise.
Everything you know.
Praise.
Kol HaNeshama. Kol HaNeshama. Kol HaNeshama. Te Halleluya. Kol HaNeshama. Kol HaNeshama. Kol HaNeshama. Te Halleluya.
Praise
with your working.
Praise.
Praise with your play.
Praise.
Praise with your thinking.
Praise.
With what you say.
Praise.
Praise with your dreaming.
Praise.
Praise through the night.
Praise.
Praise with your actions.
Praise.
Praise with all your might.
Kol HaNeshama. Kol HaNeshama. Kol HaNeshama. Te Halleluya. Kol HaNeshama. Kol HaNeshama. Kol HaNeshama. Te Halleluya.
Praise with your timbrel. Praise with a dance.
Praise
with your senses. Every single chance. With your feet,
praise,
praise with your heart,
praise.
Every single beat.
Praise. Kol HaNeshama, Kol HaNeshama, Kol HaNeshama, Te Halleluya. Kol HaNeshama, Kol HaNeshama, Kol HaNeshama, Te Halleluya.
Praise with a trumpet,
praise,
praise with a flute,
praise.
Praise with a harp.
Praise
with a lute,
praise.
Praise with a bucket,
praise.
Praise with a pot,
praise.
Praise with crashing cymbals,
praise.
Everything you've got, hey,
Kol HaNeshama, Kol HaNeshama, Kol HaNeshama, Te Halleluya, Kol HaNeshama, Kol HaNeshama, Kol HaNeshama, Te Halleluya.
That was Kol HaNeshama, praise God. Our guest this morning, whom you just heard singing, is Jewish children's music star Billy Jonas, a delightful and creative musician and storyteller. Meet him and find out how somebody becomes a Jewish children's music star when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Tango, oh, tango, oh.
Join your voice with renowned Jewish singer Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson Jay. Sing, dance, and celebrate the holiday of Sukkot with the whole family. Billy Jonas has been entertaining the world with his funky folk music for years. Join the fun with Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson Jay. Tickets include a light dinner and a PJ Library story. For tickets and more information, visit TucsonJCC.org or call 520-299-3000.
We are delighted to welcome Billy Jonas. He is a very popular, I don't know, is it wrong to say Jewish kids music star? How does that feel, and does it seem appropriate to you?
I like that, and I would say I have three different hats I wear, and that's one of the hats. Another hat is just a alternative neo-tribal synagogue service superstar, which means I like to play percussion a lot, and I often have percussion instruments I've created, and I'll just show up for all the adults and services, and we'll do music the way it was done 2,000 years ago, you know, or we'll get our King David groove on and do Kol HaNshama the way he might have done it. Then the third hat, of course, is just family, which means everybody all together, which is kind of like any good Pixar movie. There's stuff going on for everybody, but it's not located for one group or the other. How does that sound?
That sounds really good and kind of complicated. You know, you were you had a sophisticated musical background. You went to Oberlin, that mecca of music education in America. Did you think you were going to do kids' music?
I didn't know what I was going to do when I was in college.
You mean like everybody else with a liberal arts degree?
That's it. It was liberal arts to the hilt, and I took a lot of colleges, a lot of classes in the conservatory, because it's a world-class conservatory, and there it was, and we were allowed to sign up. But I did not want to get a degree from the conservatory because it just didn't feel right at the time. I was interested in too many things, and that felt a little too specialized. So my plan was just to figure out how the world worked and how I could be of service to myself and everyone else. And that's what I did. And then the music thing kind of happened afterwards. I slowly worked my way into performing for adults and becoming a singer-songwriter. And, of course, kids heard it and got turned on by it. I say, of course, because the style of music I do lends itself to that. But I didn't know that when I got started.
It's kind of funny how we end up doing things without necessarily having a direction, and then it turns out to be a good direction. You use a lot, as you mentioned, your percussionist background. You use a lot of different kinds, not only of instruments, but of sort of, I don't know, environmental music? What's the right term to use? Found objects, things like that?
Yeah, homemade found objects. And you could call it environmental music or environmentally resonant music. I like to believe that music can happen anywhere, anytime, with anyone and anything. And with that in mind, I've taken it as a challenge to say, okay, it's time to make music and we don't have instruments. What can we do? That means if we're in the kitchen, we use chopsticks and pots and pans. If we're in the woods, we use sticks and rocks and our bodies and our voices. And I believe this is tapping into the essence of music, which is basically the way it was done thousands of years ago, banging and singing. You have your voice and you got whatever rhythm that your body creates by walking or by breathing, and the items you have around you. And I love tapping into that ancient sort of primal source for music.
We will talk much more with Billy Jonas, who'll be here in Tucson shortly at the Jay, when we come back in just a few moments here on Too Jewish.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners.
with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or ekvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, 2JewishRadio.com, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And Gemar Chatima Tova, a good day after Yom Kippur.
And the best to you.
Thank you.
For this new year.
Chag Sameach. We have lots of things we can say. You came back recently from an extraordinary reunion trip with a group that you had taken to Russia when they were young. And you went to not technically Russia, I guess, but a series of Eastern and Central European locations. Let's talk about the experience and their experience of these Jewish places now.
Right. Well, we went to what our grandparents would have certainly referred to as Russia,
right,
which is Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah.
We went to two very different cities in Ukraine, Odessa and Kiev. And those are the cities I'd most like to discuss with you, because I think we've talked on the air before about Budapest and Vienna and Prague.
And Prague, of course.
Although the Jewish Museum in Vienna has opened a whole new location. So there are two locations that are maybe half a mile apart.
Right.
And that might be worth returning to.
Yeah.
But I have to say, the most extraordinary surprises awaited us in Odessa. First of all, the fact that it's less than an hour and a half by air from Vienna is sort of shocking. You think of Odessa as far, far to the east, and it's really, you know, it's closer to Vienna than London is. It's closer to Vienna than Paris is. It's closer to Vienna than Brussels is. It seems like a world apart, but when you actually look at the buildings that were built in Odessa in the 19th century, which included the hotel in which we stayed and many other buildings, they look a lot like Viennese buildings from the same period. They have caryatids, and they have a lot of the same architectural
same
features.
Same sort of Austro-Hungarian Empire look.
Yeah, it's a very familiar-looking city.
Yeah.
And there's nothing really old there, because Odessa was built on special order from Catherine the Great. So there was nothing there at the end of the 18th century. It was sort of built by royal command,
yeah,
and finished by her son.
Kind of like, I want to say Leningrad, because you were talking about that. But St. Petersburg is also, you know, a 19th century city, kind of, or 18th, 19th century. But I guess Odessa is even younger.
Yeah. Because St. Petersburg was actually built
starting 1700
on the order of Peter the Great.
Right.
So it was earlier.
A little earlier.
So Odessa, first of all, because it was built by Russians and for Russians, is still overwhelmingly a Russian city. People speak Russian. They look Russian. There are very few Ukrainians living there. It's sort of geographically and accidentally part of Ukraine, but
it's Russian in culture.
Yes. Second of all, within 100 years of its creation, in fact, within much less, probably within 70 years of its creation, it was the biggest Yiddish-speaking city in the world. It was bigger than, in terms of Yiddish-speaking population, bigger than New York or Warsaw or anywhere else, in part because there were all these different minorities there. There were Turks, Armenians, Greeks, Russians, Ukrainians, Moldavians, on and on and on. And the biggest minority of all was the Jews. So the Russian aristocracy spoke French. Only the peasants spoke Russian. And Russian was nowhere near being the lingua franca for all these minorities. Most of them didn't want to bother. They did commerce. They did marketing. They did shopping. They did everyday life in Yiddish. So all these non-Jewish people spoke Yiddish. They acquired an Odessa Jewish accent even when they spoke Russian, or if they did speak Russian. So today, if you want to be a successful stand-up comic in the Russian Federation, you have to either have or fake that accent. You have to sound like an Odessa Jew, which is, to the Russian ear, the way Jerry Seinfeld sounds to us, like a New York Jew, with, and they're automatically funnier than anybody else. More on Odessa next week.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk then.
Look forward to it.
We welcome our Shin Shinim, Chen Denachi and Tamir Shakuri from the Weintraub Israel Center, here teaching us about Israel and experiencing the American Jewish community as well. Hope you had an easy Yom Kippur, and now we can say Chag Sameach. It's time for Sukkot.
Chag Sameach.
So tell us about what Sukkot is like for you guys growing up.
So Sukkot is a very special holiday for me. It all starts with the day that my dad just comes to my room and say, okay, we need to go to the attic, get the sukkah, and let's start to build it. And it's like a fun project for me and my dad. We just sit outside all day and we build the sukkah and we decorate it and we bring the tables. And it feels like a very special day because we're all like, so my sisters sit down and do all the decorations, and my dad and I build the sukkah, and my mom is cooking for the meal that's going to be there. And it's just so nice to have this feeling during the house, like in the house, where everyone's like feeling involved and like working for the holiday. And also, we have this tradition where I invite my friends over to my sukkah, and once we even slept there in the sukkah, because it's one of the customs.
That's
and
right. They shave a sukkah. It means to live in the sukkah, not just sit, right?
Yeah. So it's like, it's very close to the house. So we just like bring food there, and we sit there a lot. So every time I invite friends during the sukkah vacation, then we sit in the sukkah and talk and eat. And it's really fun.
Very nice. So your family stopped building a sukkah when you were young, Chen. You were deprived.
So I think just because my brother's older, and usually sukkah is like for parents usually make more effort in the sukkah when the kids are younger because it's very fun to decorate it. And so when I got a little bit older and lost interest, they kind of backed out of it. But I might make them do it again when I come back because nice. But we always go and visit other people's sukkot, and we always we have a very cool tradition in sukkot. The entire street gathers around and everyone puts tables outside and chairs, and we have a big dinner together. So that's something I really like about sukkot. And as a kid, I always remember making decorations for the sukkah at school, and it's really fun.
Now, this is a time also everybody should know that everybody in Israel is off of school, right? There's a Sukkot vacation, and many people are off of work, and they go on vacation sometimes, you know, usually within Israel someplace as part of a way of celebrating, but also to be able to come back and have guests, you know, kind of both real-life guests and ushpizin to celebrate Sukkot. It connects you to the natural world. Thank you, Chag Sameach, Zman Simchatenu, this season of joy.
Thank you, Rabbi.
We welcome John Ben Asher, headmaster of the Tucson Hebrew Academy, our maven on Jewish education. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Tov, good morning.
Good morning. It's hard to get up the day after Yom Kippur.
Yeah, long day.
But Sukkot's coming up.
Do you feel all cleansed now and ready?
I never even know how I feel the day after Yom Kippur. Mostly exhausted.
Yeah.
But cleansed, yeah. The funny part about Nila, the concluding service on Yom Kippur, is by the time you get there, he just sort of feel open to everything.
You know? Yeah.
No
you
food,
know,
no water, just right. Lots and of prayer.
I always marvel at the work that our clergy does around the high holidays and the whole synagogue machinery. So I just want to say a thank you. I don't know how y'all do it. Fasting is tough and showing up for services takes effort. But to be working it and, you know, managing the flock and shepherding us all through this holy time, that's a lot of work. So thanks on behalf of everybody out there.
Thank you, John. That was an unsolicited testimonial.
It's not kissing up. I really mean it.
I appreciate it. It's also a great privilege because it really sure. feels like you're using everything you have.
I can imagine it would be very energizing.
It is. And then once you finish, the great part about Judaism is it gives you a great fun festival, Sukkot, to follow.
That's right. Simchatenu. That's right.
The time of our joy. How do you teach Sukkot? What's sure. fun for you in making Sukkot a great educational experience?
I like that question because it is fun. And there's a little bit of irony in this because we are commemorating a time when we were wandering in the desert for 40 years.
Right.
I'm sure at the time the Israelites didn't think it was so much fun.
No.
But for us, it's different.
Like camping when you're a nomad is probably not that fun.
That's right. But when you live in your house and you can go sleep in the yard for a week, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so, invite people to come over.
Sukkot is, again, one of those classic Jewish experiences that combines being physical and getting your hands involved and doing that, you know, we talk about that religion of doing, of practicing the faith. So there's so much to do in the practice. You know, you get to build, you get to create, and
it's
of course,
different every year. So if you're like me and you know,
right,
aren't good at it.
Everybody has a different strategy and a different approach to getting their sukkah up.
Different materials, different
right?
decorations.
It's new every year for some. For others, they're carting out the sukkah kit. But whatever works, you're engaged and you're involved. And there's a freshness to it. We're using fresh chak, the covering of the roof.
Or, you know. You can't put your old palm fronds from last year.
That's
you?
Right. They got to be green. And hanging of fresh fruits and the celebration of the harvest. So there's so much to learn and do. And through doing, we teach. Through preparations, through decorations. And then there are the rituals of being in the sukkah, saying the prayer for sitting down, leshev basukkah, shaking the lulav and using the etrog. And, you know, addressing the four corners of the earth, if you will. So this is a classic example of learning by doing that gives us great joy in celebrating who we are and our amazing cultural heritage as Jews.
Absolutely. Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach. Sukkot Sameach.
Moadim l'simcha. Chagim muzmanim l'sasan.
Amen.
Celebratory Sukkot. Thanks, John.
Enjoy, everyone.
When we return on To Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A Reform rabbi was such a compulsive golfer that once, on Yom Kippur morning, he left the house very early and went out for a quick 9 holes by himself. An angel who happened to be looking on immediately notified his superiors that a grievous sin was being committed. On the 6th hole, God caused a mighty wind to take the ball directly from the tee to the cup. A miraculous shot. The angel was horrified. "A hole in one? You call this punishment, Lord?" he said. And God smiled. "So, who can he tell?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read special selections from the Torah in honor of the holiday of Sukkot, or Sukkot. This season is an embarrassment of holiday riches for Jews, and the Torah readings reflect this. Sukkot marks the great fall Thanksgiving festival, the Feast of Tabernacles, when we are commanded to remember the transitory nature of our ancestors wandering through the wilderness of Sinai, as well as the transitory nature of our own lives. In the season of the fall harvest, when we eat the first and best of the produce of the natural world, we take a week to demonstrate our gratitude for the necessities of life: food, shelter, clothing, health. And in this week's Torah readings, we receive the mitzvah to build a sukkah, a temporary tabernacle, this booth or hut outdoors, designed to last just a week, well, actually 8 days, to eat in and perhaps sleep in. We decorate it with the symbols of the harvest, fruits and vegetables, and enjoy a fall festival celebrating the goodness of the world God has given us. Enjoyment is the key. This is Zman Simchatenu, the season of our joy. We are literally commanded to celebrate our good fortune. It's a great lesson in appreciating the gifts we've received and appreciating the many good things we have. Gratitude is an experience few of us can maintain for long, but it is the essential source of so much that is profoundly religious and profoundly good. May we each find a way to be grateful during this week dedicated to gratitude. But while gratitude and joy are the prevailing themes of the Festival of Sukkot and its Torah readings, there is one special additional reading we include on this festival that is not from the Torah itself, but instead from the latter stages of the Bible, the Ketuvim, or writings. Ecclesiastes, Kohelet, the beautiful biblical book chanted on the Shabbat of Sukkot, is perhaps the single most beautiful piece of literature in all history, succinct, poetic, gorgeous, and wise. It includes famous phrases that have become part of our lexicon, including "the sun also rises," and "there is nothing new under the sun," "all rivers run to the sea, but the sea is never full," and "for everything there's a time and a season for every purpose under heaven." Even "the earth returns to the dust that it was, but the spirit returns to God who gave it." The conclusion of Kohelet of Ecclesiastes is simple but powerful. After a poetic search of wisdom and folly, a survey of what the world has to offer, the author writes, "The conclusion of the matter, all having been heard, is to revere God and keep the mitzvot, for that makes the complete human being." As autumn approaches, Kohelet reminds us that so much of what we do is vanity. "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity," the book begins, and compels us to realize that God is our only true source of meaning and beauty. At this joyous time of year, it is a sobering but truly magnificent reminder of all that really matters. Even, perhaps especially, at seasons of joy and times of gladness, we need to remember that our greatest success comes from our integrity and our belief. When we return on Two Jewish, our guest, children's music star Billy Jonas, will explain how you can make music out of anything and why that might actually be the best way to do it. Find out when we return in a moment here on Two Jewish. Tongo, oh,
tongo, oh. Join your voice with renowned Jewish singer Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson J. Sing, dance, and celebrate the holiday of Sukkot with the whole family. Billy Jonas has been entertaining the world with his funky folk music for years. Join the fun with Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson J. Tickets include a light dinner and a PJ Library story. For tickets and more information, visit TucsonJCC.org or call 520-299-3000.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
There have been a series of natural disasters over the past few weeks, the latest, the terrible earthquakes in Mexico. Last week, volunteers from Israel's Zaka search and rescue organization pulled the body of a local rabbi from an office building that collapsed in the massive earthquake that hit Mexico City. Rabbi Chaim Ashkenazi had been working in the building when the 7.1 magnitude earthquake struck central Mexico September 19th, rocking Mexico City and causing hundreds of buildings to collapse. Ashkenazi served as a rabbi at the Kehilat Magen David Synagogue. He was an in-law of Rabbi Shlomo Tawil, chief rabbi of the Magen David Jewish community of Mexico. Zaka volunteers in Mexico have been working with the Mexican Jewish Rescue and Recovery Organization Cadena since September 19th. They worked straight through Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shabbat in accordance with Chief Rabbi Tawil's rulings. Volunteers were actually working when a magnitude 6.2 aftershock hit the area. More than 300 people have been killed since the first earthquake struck Mexico. A 71-member delegation of Israeli soldiers arrived in Mexico for a week, engineers helping to assess the structural integrity of buildings affected by the earthquake. The chief rabbi of the IDF gave the group permission to travel on Rosh Hashanah to reach Mexico. One day last week, the residents of a Mexican town actually took to the streets and applauded the rescue team. The moment was caught on video and aired on Israel's national TV. Two Israeli aid organizations, IsraAid and iAid, also sent delegations to Mexico to help in the search and rescue. iAid, which is funded by Sykora Inc. and the Ted Arison Family Foundation, sent a 15-member team, which has helped locate the bodies of several people in a school and a residential building. Meanwhile, 25 former Israeli soldiers who were volunteering at a school in Mexico City teaching English, math, and other subjects evacuated 460 students at the school following the first earthquake and are credited with saving those kids' lives as the buildings collapsed. The ex-soldiers are volunteering through a program called Heroes for Life, an NGO. In other news, in Germany, Jewish leaders congratulated Angela Merkel on her election to a fourth term as chancellor while decrying the rise of Germany's newest right-wing populist party, which for the first time will enter the national parliament, the Bundestag. The Alternative for Germany party, or AfD, finished third in the vote, 13% of the popular vote it took. The party was founded in 2013. It will have 94 seats in the 631-member Bundestag. Merkel's Christian Democratic Union won with a pretty weak 33% of the vote, followed by the Social Democratic Party, which also had a bad showing, just 21%. Joseph Schuster, head of the Central Council of Jews in Germany, called the AfD right-wing a party that agitates against minorities. For now, their target is Muslims, but I am convinced that when the topic of Muslims is no longer interesting and it becomes politically and socially opportune to switch to another minority, they could easily do so. I include Jews in that number. World Jewish Congress President Ron Lauder congratulated Merkel on her victory, calling her a true friend of Israel and the Jewish people. He also sharply denounced what he termed the disgraceful reactionary party, AfD, recalling the worst of Germany's past. And Moshe Kantor, president of the Brussels-based European Jewish Congress, welcomed the election, saying Merkel had shown tremendous courage and conviction in her support of the revival of Jewish life in Germany, as well as being a strong supporter of the State of Israel. He also expressed concern about the strong showing of the neo-fascist AfD. We trust that centrist parties in the Bundestag will ensure that AfD has no representation in the coming governing coalition. In other better news, I'm kind of thinking that the most interesting place to be on the High Holy Days is the historic Sixth and I Synagogue in Washington, D.C. This year, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg told Rosh Hashanah congregants that being Jewish has helped her have empathy for other minority groups. Ginsburg, who is now 84 years old, spoke at Erev Rosh Hashanah services at the Sixth and I Historic Synagogue in downtown Washington. Her appearance was a surprise to worshipers at the non-denominational synagogue. She said, if you are a member of a minority group, particularly a minority group that has been picked on, you have empathy for others who are similarly situated. She told the congregants that Jewish values had guided her work on the bench. The Jewish religion is an ethical religion. We are taught to do right, to love mercy, to do justice, not because there's going to be any reward in heaven or punishment in hell. We live righteously because that's how people should live, not anticipating any award in the hereafter, Ginsburg said. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a member of the Supreme Court since 1993, is one of three Jewish justices currently serving on the court, the longest serving of them. The other Jewish justices are Stephen Breyer and Elena Kagan. Justice Breyer spoke last year at 6th and I High Holy Day services. Maybe it's Justice Kagan's turn next year. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Billy Jonas, singer, songwriter, percussionist, multi-instrumentalist, general entertainer, family entertainer, Jewish kids music star, multi-talent. We'd go on for a while. Tell us about how you write songs. Like, what's your process? Everybody's got different stuff.
Sure. I like to think of it in terms of seeds, planting seeds. And the seeds of songs come to me in multiple ways. One way is that through words, the rhythm of how something is said to me or how I say something just suggests it's worth repeating. And then I'll sort of grow a song out of that phrase, that rhythmic, melodic phrase of how I speak or say something or how somebody says it to me. Another way is if I am playing there's a riff on the piano or the guitar, and it sounds so good, and then I start fitting words to it afterwards. And then the third way is just I have an idea, like something that feels real important to me. My song One occurred that way. It wasn't like a melody or a rhythm or a phrase at all. It was just this idea that what if you had a song where the entire audience could sing along without having ever heard the song and participate all the way through, the way music often occurs in tribal societies and tribal cultures. If you listen, it seems like everybody's always known the song somehow. And so it's those three ways. Those are the three seeds. It's an idea that I then put something together from, something I hear or say, or something I play that seems that it would like to have words along with it.
Who were your major musical influences?
Growing up, it was all the musicians whose names start with the letter J. So, the top ones would be Joni Mitchell, Keith Jarrett, and Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, that's a nice mix. You got a little piano, you got a little guitar, you got some folk music there.
Yeah. And along the way, I discovered Igor Stravinsky and The Rite of Spring. And to this day, anytime I put it on, it does not get old for me. That is my favorite piece in the world. And there are hundreds of other artists who have inspired me, but those were the top. And of course, you know, there was Pete Seeger and the whole folk movement when I was just, it had probably peaked before I was born, but it was in the air. And the sing-along culture of the folk movement and you know, other luminaries like Frank Zappa and that kind of thing.
Jewish music is ethnomusic, and do you find it to be different to do Jewish music, folk music, pop music? American music can be pretty much anything. What's uniquely Jewish about the kind of work that you do?
You know, that's a great question, and you reminded me one of my primary influences that I want to tag onto the last question. When I was young, I went to a congregation, Rodfit Tzedek, on the south side of Chicago. And the cantor there was Abraham Lubin. And
he was an old friend, by the way, an amazing cantor.
Yeah, amazing operatic voice, probably trained in the European tradition. I'm not positive about that, but...
Yeah, no, he was... I'll tell you, I heard him do Pinchas Pinchik's Rosa de Shabbos at the Kotel in Jerusalem at a cantor's convention in 1987 and loved it and learned it because of Abe Lubin. So anyway, go ahead, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, his son was my age, so we were in school a little bit together, and he trained me for my bar mitzvah and it was a conservative synagogue, still is. And I just remember sitting in services and his voice filling up the space. It was haunting and beautiful and otherworldly, and that saturated my being. So I want to list that along with my other influences. But to answer your question more directly, how Jewish music might be different than other kinds of things, I really strive to mix it up. I don't want to do say I'm purely a Jewish musician or purely anything else. I believe I'm sort of a purely American Jewish musician, and the American habit is to be potpourri. You know, it's to be the melting pot. That's the way our country is built, and that's the same way my music is built. And so, of course, African-American musical influences are throughout everything that I do, as well as Abe Lubin's melodies. I was in a choir that he led, and that was some of my first musical experiences, plus everything I've ever heard on the radio. It's just all mixed together. So how would I distinguish it? Mostly I would distinguish Jewish music, or at least music for worship, that it allows us to make certain things explicit that other music would make implicit. And that's what I referring to God or referring to the spiritual realm and taking text, liturgical texts, and knowing that everybody might have some familiarity with them, or at least would honor them if they haven't heard them before. They'd say, oh, that's from there? Okay, let me give that some attention if Billy finds that worth singing. So that's some of the ways I would distinguish that and have striven to make my music get the label Jewish. Yeah.
When you write a piece, how do you know that it's good? How can you tell?
I have three different layers of evaluation. The first layer, and I tell you this because there may be some listeners out there who would like to be writing stuff. The first layer is people in my life that I play the song for who will listen without a critical ear at all. And they'll just say, oh, you made something. That's awesome. The second layer of people, once I've gotten something roughed in, the second layer of people would say, that's really good. Can you sing verse 2 again? I got a little lost there. And so they'll be very broad in their what might be considered criticism. And then the third layer of people are the ones who say, you know what? That's not a keeper. They're the kind of that's the harsh layer. And I have a few people in my life who I learned the hard way that that's where they're at. And I still go to them at some point with songs or with recordings because their feedback is so valuable. And so between those three different levels or layers, I am able to decide whether something is worth keeping. Of course, there's a lot of value to writing something that is just for your journal or just moves you to the next piece. And occasionally those songs make it through the barricades and onto the Bema or onto a concert stage. But I find out quickly that they're not flying. They're not supporting the flow of a set of music or a service. And it's trial and error. So, yeah, that's the way I do it.
So in my family, they don't want to hear me sing. They don't want to hear what I've written. And they're my toughest critics. How about for you?
I have a 2.5-year-old daughter. Her name is Layla Rose. And she just loves everything the first time she hears it.
Oh, you know, maybe it's because my kids are teenagers now. But go ahead.
That's
great. Maybe it'll stay that way, God willing, as we say.
I love that idea. I doubt it, but I love the idea. And the first time she hears it, she loves it. And then what's interesting is after the third or fourth time, she develops favorites. And no, don't sing that, Daddy. Not that one. And then sometimes she doesn't know what she wants to hear, and I just have to keep trying songs. And then I'll hit one, she'll go, that one. Yeah.
Or if she asks for something again, does that mean something?
Oh, yeah. She did that in the car the other day. Let me see if I can remember what it was. I was singing a song. Maybe it'll come back to me. But over and over, she doesn't want to hear it. It was very short, and she just loved it. And I would stop singing. She'd say, sing it again. Sing it again.
Aww,
yeah.
That's pretty great. What's your favorite song that you've written?
Favorite song I've written is a song called God Is In. And that one is interesting. The seed of that song came from an idea. I was standing in the kitchen of a house I was living in back in 1991. It's a Victorian mansion rooming house. There was about 13 of us living there. And at the time, I would have preferred to have been living in a teepee. But circumstances had led me to connect with some folks who said, come stay with us in this house. Rent is cheap. I just landed in Asheville, North Carolina. And I was in the kitchen, and there was a microwave oven. And I just read something about how they leak and there's radiation, even though they're supposed to be safe. And I said, I don't want to live in a house with a microwave. And this voice popped in my head that said, Billy, God is in the microwave too. And I immediately grabbed a pen and a piece of paper and just started making a list of all the places that God is that I was certain of and places that I thought God might not be. And then I had to come up with rhyming couplets to explain why God is indeed in the places that we think God may not be. And it really sums up my theology in a strong way. And the other reason it's my favorite is because it seems to work for so many people of so many different faiths. It's been a very powerful touchstone of a song for 20 years.
Billy, you've performed with a lot of folks, Pete Seeger, Annie DeFranco. Who's the favorite? Who's your favorite?
David Wilcox, definitely. David Wilcox is well known by many in the folk world. He's one of the most creative musicians I've ever met and creative people I've ever met. And there is always this magical tapestry that's woven when he plays. And I've learned so much over the past 25 years of knowing him when I perform with him or just watch him perform. But I want to add that I now have a new favorite, which is a trio of people called the Abraham Jam.
Hmm.
And that's David Lamott, who's a Quaker Christian songwriter, Dawood Warnsby, who's a Muslim songwriter, and Billy Jonas, who's a Jewish songwriter.
That would be
that's
you.
Me.
Yeah.
And we have an initiative that we just had a big concert here on Saturday night. We did a recording for the week before that. And it's just what you can imagine. It's all of us getting together and singing in harmony with the idea that blending voices in harmony is potentially more powerful than everybody singing the same note in unison. It's where we can each stand firmly in our own faith and yet find common ground for making beautiful things together. Mm-hmm. And so that... It was an amazing concert. We're still getting emails afterwards, and I've never experienced that before, where for days afterwards people are emailing about their experience of it. So, yeah, very excited about that.
I want to thank Billy Jonas for a great visit here on Two Jewish. He'll be here in Tucson at the J. Where can people go to find out more about you?
My website is billyjonas.com, and that's the best place, billyjonas.com.
And people
that's
can...
Yeah, there's a clearinghouse there for things like the Abraham Jam, and I've got a new initiative called The Plan. You can be part of The Plan if you click on it. The Plan stands for the Peace, Love, Action Network, but just go to billyjonas.com to find out about that.
And you can also, by the way, hear some of his songs, see some of the videos, all kinds of great stuff. Billy, thank you so much.
It's my privilege and an honor. Thank you.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical playout from Billy Jonas.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Two Jewish. Our guest will be Rabbi Sid Schwartz, one of the most innovative thinkers in the Jewish world today, whose latest project is as the creator and director of the Clergy Leadership Incubator. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TwoJewishRadio.com website. Top 10 Jewish podcasts in America, according to Moment magazine. Our playout this morning on Two Jewish comes from our guest this morning, Billy Jonas, his version of Oseh Shalom, set to his own African influence melody, tango. My friends, a very happy Chag Sukkot Sameach, Moadim L'Simcha. May you and your family have a wonderful coming holiday of gratitude and thanksgiving, and a Shavua Tov, a good week, a week, we pray, of peace.
Ready? Here we go. Oseh Shalom.
Oseh Shalom.
Oseh Shalom Bimromav.
Oseh Shalom Bimromav.
Hu Ya'aseh.
Hu Ya'aseh.
Shalom Aleinu.
Shalom Aleinu.
Ve'al Kol Yisrael.
Ve'al Kol Yisrael.
Ve'al Kol Yoshvei Tevel. And I'll translate.
Oseh Shalom.
The one who makes peace.
Oseh Shalom Bimromav.
Who makes peace in heaven high.
Ya'aseh.
Will make.
Shalom Aleinu.
Peace for us all.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.